From snake show handler to storyteller, writer Tim McLaurin next on Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me now for the third segment in a series of programs spotlighting contemporary Southern writers. Tim McLaurin is here now to read from and talk about two of his books, Woodrow's Trumpet and Keeper of the Moon.
Mary and Jeffrey had moved from Connecticut to the Chapel Hill area after Jeffrey was hired by a large pharmaceutical firm in the Research Triangle. The new job was a step up, more responsibility, plus a sizable salary increase. Mary had a master's degree in journalism from Columbia and had worked the past 2 years for a small newspaper in Hartford, but she agreed the move made sense. Jeffrey had to climb the ladder while he was still young, while she looked at her writing as an art that could be nurtured slowly. Besides, for the time, she was enjoying being a housewife while trying to understand this strange new culture called the South.
Writer Tim McLaurin. He'll be back in just a moment to read from and talk about two of his books, Woodrow's Trumpet and Keeper of the Moon. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center. This program is made possible by a major grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Tim McLaurin is a son of the modern South, a child of rural North Carolina, where he grew up in the 1960s. But even though his hometown isn't far from Chapel Hill, the university community where he now lives, McLaurin's life these days differs distinctly from his non-literary origins. After high school and between stints in the Marine Corps and the Peace Corps, Tim McLaurin was Wild Man Mac, the proprietor and star attraction of a traveling snake show. But then he began writing. His first book, a novel entitled The Acorn Plan, explored the hard-drinking and often self-destructive people who were part of his youth. In his second book, a novel entitled Woodrow's Trumpet, McLaurin wrote about the overlapping but frequently conflicting dimensions of the Old South and the New. His most recent book is Keeper of the Moon, subtitled A Southern Boyhood. In it, he writes about a family legacy of love, loyalty, and work in the hardscrabble South around Fayetteville, North Carolina. He recalls the boyhood gift of a telescope that made him keeper of the moon and opened to him a world beyond his southern horizons. But Keeper of the Moon isn't altogether retrospective. It also tells about Tim McLaurin's struggle with bone marrow cancer, a struggle that inspired him to examine his life and rededicate himself to the southern landscape that he loves. I asked Tim McLaurin to read from Keeper of the Moon.
I had volunteered to bring the scope to school and help our class raise money. The moon was in the right phase, half full, her glow not so bright that it drowned all surface features, the night sky clear, cold, hinting of frost. The principal announced over the intercom that the star machine was set up outside, and a tentative few came first to trade a dime for a cool view of the sky. Word spread. That smooth, dim coin of light that everyone but hunters or lovers took for granted now loomed into focus as a craggy, gnarled world of dramatic brilliance and shadows. Suddenly I had become the keeper of the moon, the kid who knew how to turn the knobs and gears that lowered the sky until you felt you could reach and cradle it in your palm. In writing Keeper of the Moon, it was different in that it is a real-life book, you know. I mean, always before I had the sort of like bumper that it was fiction, mm-hmm. You know. If somebody had to say something about the book, you know, I'd say, well, look, it's made up, you know, give me a break. But in Keeper was a hard book to write because it was real life. And of the experiences, I don't know one that stands out except just living. It was difficult to write in the fact that there would be people who would read the book and see themselves. And
do you have people who don't talk to you to this day or who are reluctant to talk to you because of the way you've presented them in The Keeper of the Moon?
Actually, no. The response has been really good. I mean, my mom certainly had problems with parts of the book, and my mother-in-law had many more problems with parts of the book because I'm married to her daughter.
Right.
No, it's gone real well, because what I used as the creed for writing the book is the lesson that is learned from each part of the book greater than the toll in telling the story. If it is, it has to be told, you know. And there are a few things I did not talk about in the book, you know, that would have made the book even better.
Tim McLaurin, in your wonderful book, Keeper of the Moon, you've got one extraordinary chapter about how as a teenager you went on a date and you, tell me what happened on the way to that date. You picked up a snake. What happened?
Yeah, I was on the way to pick up this girlfriend of mine who I eventually married. And on the way over, there was this large rat snake crossing the road. And as a snake catcher, keeper, whatever, I always have a pillow case in the back seat. So I stopped and caught the snake and put it in the pillowcase and kind of loosely knotted the top of it and went on and picked up my date. And I totally forgot about the snake in the back seat. So we went over to this is the days of the drive-in, you know, where you have a big drive-in theater, you know, and it was the first date with this young woman. And so I was trying to get my courage up to put my arm around her. So I kind of put my hand up on the back of the seat, you know, I was kind of getting around to put my hand on her shoulder.
Right.
And as I was doing this, I noticed suddenly that the snake had gotten out of the pillowcase and was coming up the seat and across her shoulder.
Now, was she aware of this right then?
Well, she felt something on her shoulder, and what she thought was that I had put my hand on her shoulder.
And gave you a look that said...
And she liked it. I mean, she smiled and kind of scooted over beside me.
Uh-huh.
And I was horrified. I mean, here I was sitting there, and there was a snake coming over her shoulder, and it started down her shoulder and down her chest towards the forbidden zone. And so I didn't want to say, baby, look, there's a snake on your shoulder. And so it finally came down low enough that she looked over and realized, well, she thought it was my hand, but she grabbed what she thought was my hand and snatched it away from her chest and saw it was a snake. And so she came over me out the window, fell out on the pavement, and was hollering and shouting and whatever. And I caught the snake and eventually got her back in the car and carried her home. And she eventually married me.
What is that? What is this thing that you have with snakes, Tim McLaurin? Is that a macho trip to prove that you're not afraid of them? Is there something particularly or peculiarly Southern going on here?
Well, I mean, certainly we have snakes in the South, and as a man, for whatever reason, I'm attracted to snakes. But I think it's just purely an interest that other people don't have. You know, I mean, I've always looked at snakes in the same way as my telescope. It was a vehicle for me to learn about something outside of my normal interest.
And you still keep them to this day. You got what, pit vipers and rattlers, and just recently got rid of a cobra.
Yeah, and I'm doing a snake show next week for the Sierra Club. But in a sense, maybe, I guess if some psychologist was sitting here talking to me, she would say, or he would say, you know, there's something inside your brain that makes you do this, but I just like it, you know. It's my hobby. You know, some people fly toy planes around, you know, in the sky. I milk rattlesnakes, you know. That's my deal.
Now, the way you organize Keeper of the Moon, I think, is instructive, Tim McLaurin. You start with morning and afternoon and night, and then you end on a rather upbeat note, which is a new morning, you call it, but not before you have gone through this dark night of your soul and your body, indeed. Mm-hmm. You write about this terrible battle that you fought with a form of cancer. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that very briefly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was diagnosed at age 35 with multiple myeloma, which is a very severe form of bone marrow cancer. And I was actually diagnosed on my 10th wedding anniversary, the day I was supposedly would be flying to Paris for a week. And so I've never forgotten that day. But certainly in writing the book, I think the illness made me want to write it, you know, because there was the very real fact that I might be dead, you know, in a couple of years or
now,
3 years.
Did it have anything to do, the strength that you took from your people, your experiences, the way you write about all of this in Keeper of the Moon, being a Southerner, did that give you any particular strength here?
Well, I don't know being Southern, but just having this, like I say, love of the land and of family, which I think is very Southern, family ties, certainly helped me to write the book. But also, I think that my history helped me in a lot of ways. I mean, I was in the Marine Corps at 18. I went to the Peace Corps when I was 31. You know, in a lot of ways, this was another adventure, this disease. You know, it was one more thing you have to confront and get through. Uh-huh. So I, in some ways, I looked at the disease as, you know, heck, you know, the doctors are saying you're going to be dead in a couple of years.
Well, and you said, nope, this is just another obstacle I can beat.
Yeah, exactly. And I did. I beat it, you know. Yeah. And in writing the book, I would have written Keeper of the Moon regardless of the disease, but certainly it did flavor it in some ways, you know, because I do go in references, as you know, to my battle with the disease and my father's death from lung cancer and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Tim McLaurin, we're talking about your life as a writer and your experience as a Southerner. Religion has always been a big factor in Southern life. You were raised on the conservative side of things in religious terms. You think religion continues to be a force in Southern society?
I think Southerners certainly are tied to the churches. I mean, you know, I mean Southern Baptist, you know, I mean, the word itself, you know, Southern Baptist. You don't have Northern Baptist.
You do, but not the way you have Southern Baptist.
But not in that title. So, I think religion plays a big part, you know, certainly in my work. You know, I mean, I've, you know, you live under the domain of God, under the sky, and I think Southerners look at religion very, very sincerely, and it affects their life. You know, as far as my writing, in a lot of ways that has guided what I write about.
But you also have a very important passage in Keeper of the Moon where you enter a church, you think about making this decision to go down and be cleansed in the blood of the Lamb and declare yourself for Jesus, and what happens? You turn around and walk out.
Turn and walk away from it. Right? Yeah.
Can you explain that to me?
Well, it's sort of the, in my sense, religion is also a very submissive type thing. You know, you have to submit to a doctrine.
And you're not a submissive guy.
And I'm not a submissive. I've never been baptized, you know, and probably never will be.
But that doesn't mean you're not a believer.
But no, I believe I have very strong religious beliefs, but I'm not a person that needs to walk up in front of a congregation and say, I have sinned, you know. I mean,
you do your professing in your books.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can read the book. And, you know, my sins, you know, anybody who knows me knows my sins, you know, and certainly God, quote unquote, knows my sin. So church is not a part of my life.
I want you to read another passage here, Tim McLaurin, from your book, Keeper of the Moon.
We are sons and daughters of the land, our heritage tied to fields and woods, the call of hunt, the spiritual transition of the seed that cracks the hard earth and grows into weed, food, flower, or tree. I have carried in my wallet for 7 years a plastic sandwich bag filled with plain dirt scooped from the pasture behind the home place. It has traveled with me through Africa, Europe, and much of America, a talisman that whispers to me the song of mourning doves, wind, and longwood leaf pines, the low rumble of thunder from a summer storm that has recently passed and soaked the dry fields. I hope to waltz slowly to that tune the day I lift above this bright land. I have told you of home.
This is Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond with part 3 in a series of programs spotlighting the work of contemporary Southern writers. My guest on the program at hand is Tim McLaurin. His books include 2 novels, The Acorn Plan and Woodrow's Trumpet, and Keeper of the Moon, subtitled A Southern Boyhood. In Woodrow's Trumpet, Tim McLaurin writes about the dilemmas and conflicts that underscore change in the modern South. The title character is an eccentric farmer whose heritage is traditional, but whose life shocks his rural family just as it pleases his yuppie neighbors. But only up to a point, when Woodrow and his black live-in girlfriend decide to build an inland beach complete with imported sand and flamingos, it's too much for both the yuppie crowd and the traditionals. I asked Tim McLaurin to read from his work.
Often on winter nights when most people in Oak Hills were sleeping, Woodrow ran his hounds through fields and along the ridges outside of town. He had raised the pups on a baby bottle after the bitch was killed by a car, had trained them to obey both his voice and blast from his hollow hunting horn. When Woodrow first began hunting not long after his release from the mental hospital, there was lots of speculation by townspeople as to what prompted him to run behind four hounds until the early morning hours. For a man who had lived his entire life following the orders of others, the hunts were strangely out of character. But as time passed, the hunts became just another facet of a man no one really understood, another side of his craziness. Woodrow was harmless. Let him hunt. The duet between his horn and hounds was heard only by the sleepless, a man getting up to empty his bladder, a mother sitting in watch over a fevered child, Ellis staring at frost flowers. Well, the experience of hunting to me is very personal because I am a hunter, and my father was a hunter, my grandfather, and I am surrounded by people now in Chapel Hill who think that hunting is, you know, atrocious, you know, just the symbolism of hunting.
Sure, the animal rights people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And even, you know, the issue of gun control and all that. And so I look at hunting as a part of the South. I mean, if you go to Faulkner, you know, I mean, the bear, you know, one of the best stories written. Hunting is, I think, very symbolic of the South, and we are changing and moving away from that. And but more than just the issue of hunting, we're moving away from nature. You know, we're paving over the streets, and the tobacco fields are being paved. And so it's not so much hunting, it's just that we are moving away from the earth. And I think the earth is very symbolic to Southerners.
Tim, where were your sympathies in this book? The old South or the new, the white farmer with his black live-in girlfriend, or the yuppies coming in and sort of taking over the neighborhood? How did you feel? Did you take a stand, as it were?
Well, in writing the book, I was definitely taking a stand in that I was looking at the South in the way that I know the South, and partly in the, you know, certainly in the South, the issue of race is a big issue, and I grew up with black people. You know, I mean, I worked in the fields with them. I went to school with black people, so it was me taking an example of what is the worst thing that could happen with citizens in a community, and then illustrating that through the palm tree, the sand, the the relationship, and how people adapt to that, basically.
Well, you're also being very tolerant, and you're also being very expansive in the sense that you present. Nadine is essentially a young black woman who runs away from home. She becomes a prostitute and a drug addict. You bring her back to the South, and that rejuvenates her. I mean, that puts some life back into her, and yet she has a very unfortunate, sad ending here. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag. Again, is that a symbolic of your view of the way the South is changing?
Well, but basically, yeah. I've had a lot of people say, why did you end the book this way? Why didn't you let them go off and live in Mississippi or whatever like that? But basically, the ending of the book is the death of the South, right, as I know it. And that is what is happening. The South that I know has changed and will change and become a different place. You know, the South my children will experience as adults will be much different. So, yeah, it was very symbolic, the ending of the book. But change is in that's America, you know, and we are people who change. The oak trees budded in clusters of pale green leaves that shaded wisteria vines climbing fence posts. But as Oak Hills moved into another season of birth and renewal, the fight between the townspeople and residents of the subdivision grew harsher and more bitter. The coalition met several times to discuss ways of hurrying Woodrow's appeal through court. The townspeople began collecting money in a gallon pickle jar to aid Woodrow's defense. When members of the two factions met, usually they passed without even a nod. Sales in the local stores dropped considerably as the subdivision residents carried their business to Chapel Hill or Durham. In retaliation, many of the townspeople would never before have thought of being inconsiderate began mimicking the teenagers by driving through the subdivision in the peaceful early evening with the radios blaring, or walking their dogs in the neighborhood and allowing them to soil the pretty yards. The vandalism continued. I think in the end, the South will retain what is Southern, because it's the tie to the land. And as long as people are born here and raised here and work, I think the South will endure. I mean, what is the South about? It's about chaos. You know, I'm always asked these questions about Southern writing. You know, what is Southern writing? You know,
yeah.
And what Southern writing is just writing about life. And in the South, chaos is very predominant. You know, I mean, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War was fought here.
What are you talking, political turmoil or racial turmoil?
Everything. I mean, certainly political, because the Civil War was fought in the South. Racial, if you want to go to racial, it's certainly the civil rights movement began in the South, has been played out in the South basically, and it's where even today is confronted daily. So what we as Southerners confront is turmoil, but that creates art. Mm-hmm. And so I think I don't know why everybody wants to study the South, but
it's become an industry.
But they do, and you know, we confront life head on.
Well, isn't that a bit of an irony, Tim McLaurin? I mean, here as an artist, as a novelist, an observer of the South, you benefit by standing in the midst of that turmoil and imposing some sort of an artistic order around it. So how does this work? Your books will sell to the degree that the South falls apart?
Well, all I do as a writer is just tell the stories I know. You know, it's not like I make up situations to fit what I want to write. You know, I write about the life I know. And so that's basically what I do. You know, if the South falls apart, if it affects my life, then I'll write about that, you know. But if it doesn't, then I'll continue to write the books that I do. But, you know, anybody who reads Woodrow's Trumpet, anybody who studies the South will see this degeneration of the old South and what it is becoming. And so, you know, my work as a writer is just to reflect that. And I think that is the work of any writer, from Harry Cruz to Clyde Edgerton to anybody on down the road. You know, you don't create a situation, you just reflect it.
Tim McLaurin, we're talking about your books, Woodrow's Trumpet and Keeper of the Moon. What are you working on these days?
Well, I'm currently working on a new novel. I'm under contract with Putnam for a new book. It's titled Cured by Fire.
Cured by Fire.
Yeah, Cured by Fire. And it's a pretty tough novel. It takes me outside of the South in a lot of ways. It's about a man who loses everything through a hunting accident. He comes home with his gun loaded because he's drunk and forgot to unload the gun, and kills his wife and son, and goes through this spiral downward into the depths of whatever. He ends up burning his face off in a bed fire. He sets the bed on fire with a cigarette. And so it's, in a lot of ways, it's a tough novel, you know.
Now, does this come out of experience that you have observed? I mean, how, again, your imagination, mm-hmm. and your experience at work here.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of ways, it relates to my illness, because when I came back from Seattle, I mean, I've always been a very attractive man. And I'm kidding. But when I came back from Seattle, I looked like Uncle Fester, you know, on the Adams family, basically. You know, I mean, I had lost my looks.
Oh my goodness!
So in a lot of ways, it is. It's about a man who loses everything, including his face.
This is the story of Job that you're telling me. Am I right?
Well, in some ways, it is. It's a man who loses what he possesses and has to come to terms with that, and also rages against God.
Now, you know? Is it a fair statement, Tim McLaurin, or too much of a stretch again to say that you're talking not only about yourself but about the South? When you give me this sort of a, it sounds like a parable at work here. Am I right?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. In a lot of ways, it is, because I think probably I'm writing about the South losing its face again. You know, that we are people who are changing, and the face of the South is becoming a different face. And again, you know, going back to the sense of loss and tragedy and chaos, you know, that's a good question.
I'm only going over Jordan. I'm only going over home.
Tim McLaurin is the author of two novels, The Acorn Plan and Woodrow's Trumpet, and Keeper of the Moon, a memoir of his Southern boyhood. The program is Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. In just a moment, I'll tell you where to write if you'd like to have an audio cassette of this week's show. You've been listening to the third segment in an occasional series of programs spotlighting the work of contemporary Southern writers. Upcoming programs will feature Lee Smith, Clyde Edgerton, Dory Sanders, Jill McCorkle, Tina McElroy Anza, Brent Wade, Kay Gibbons, Robert Olin Butler, and Randall Keenan. For a cassette tape of the discussion you just heard, send $5 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 693. That's program number 693, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Include $2 if you'd like to have a complete catalog of Soundings discussions available on audio cassettes. The music you heard on this show is from an album entitled The Devil's Dream and featured the Tarwater Band. Special thanks for assistance in the production of this program go to Richard Schramm and Patricia Schreiber at the National Humanities Center. This program was made possible by a major grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center.